Okay, it's kind of embarrassing how bad I am at budgeting.
Let me see your charges.
Fine.
You spent over $600 on takeout last month.
I can't cook. You know this.
Yes, I have had your disgusting food, but you're literally paying for a meal subscription on top of that.
Whoa, wait. That can't be right.
Look, just get Rocket Money. It shows you all of your expenses in one place and even tracks your subscriptions. And if there's a subscription you don't want, which for you, there are a lot you don't need, you can just cancel right in the app with a few taps.
So you mean I don't have to call anyone to cancel?
Nope. No hold times or anything. And they'll even try to get you a refund on some of the months of wasted money, which is a lot of money for you.
Okay.
And if you thought I was done, I'm not. The app can also help you make a budget that works for your income. Anytime you get close to your spending limits, it alerts you, so you know exactly where your money is going at all times.
All right, I'm in. What do I have to do?
Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple or Google Play stores.
There is a place that is spoken about only in whispers, a dark area that spawns the beginnings of urban legends, a place where anything can happen and usually does. During the light of day, it hides just outside of view. But when the sun goes down, spirits, creatures of the night, roam free, and things do go bump in the night. It is in every state and every country, and there is no escaping it. No matter how safe you feel behind your locked doors and latched windows. So we invite you to turn down the lights and turn up your radio while we join Dave Schrader and Tim Dennis, your hosts, on a journey into the darkness on the edge of town.
Welcome in, everybody, to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm Tim Dennison for Dave Schrader. We are aboard the, as you're listening right now, we are aboard the Chris Jericho Rock and Wrestling Rager cruise. You can just imagine us. We're out there on the high seas right now, right there in the, just about to the Bermuda Triangle, and we're about to call up a UFO. And we figured it would be great, as long as we're calling up UFOs in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle, to bring in a special guest and talk to him on Saturday, rather than do supernatural news, rather than do Parashare this week. We want to talk to somebody who knows a little bit about something about UFOs. We wanted to bring in our special guest, and we've had him in before, Mac Maloney. Mac, welcome back to the show. How are you today?
I'm doing good. Thanks for having me back.
Now, we wanted to bring you in and talk a little bit about, you have a new book out there, Mac Maloney's Haunted Universe, and you're tackling not just UFOs, but all things, correct? Haunted?
Right. Yeah. It's really just a collection of, weird stories that I've collected over the years from writing other books. And I had a job for a while working on TBS's Conspiratorium website, where they would we'd put together like 10 strange stories every month and, you know, basically write captions to photos for them. And I had a lot of research left over from that. And I wrote the two books, as you were mentioning, two UFO books. So it's a collection of all those stories that I always wanted to put together and put out. And so we've done it.
Now, when you were coming up with information from TBS, was it solicited stuff? Was it stuff that just kind of came your way? How did you come about the information?
Well, they would actually assign me, a topic. They would have an editorial meeting, and then they'd assign, there was three or four writers. They'd assign us all a topic for the month. So you never knew what was coming, but a lot of it was just like in this book, a lot of them were collections, the top 10, the top 10 worst assassins, the top 10 worst political conspiracies, the top 10 haunted towns in the United States, that kind of stuff. So it got me to read a lot of stuff and got me familiar with a lot of different parts of the paranormal. And like I say, a lot of research too resulted.
The one thing, Mac, I got to tell you, that's fascinating with me about television and in the behind the scenes stuff about television is when it comes to either a showrunner or a producer or someone who sits down with a researcher and they say, okay, I have an impossible topic for you to try and look up. Uh-huh. And they don't come from a practical standpoint. With the showrunners that were sitting down with you, were they more practical when it came to the paranormal, or did they just hit you with some impossible stuff and you just looked at them and said, okay, now let me come at you from a practical standpoint? Were you dealing with someone who was a little out there, or did they...
Well,
Do they have a practical standpoint?
I'll tell you, I never really have appeared on a show, but mm-hmm. I've dealt with showrunners. Mm-hmm. And at one point, one company wanted me to be the a tour guide bus for people going out to Area 51.
No.
Okay. And it would have been a 4-day free, 4 or 5 days free in Las Vegas, sure. At least that's where we would, I'd lay my head, let's say. But it would also be way out in the middle, You still got a way to go after Las Vegas to get anywhere near Area 51. They thought we could just drive right up to the gate.
Really?
So on and so they didn't do a lot of, research into it. But like I said, it would have been a free trip and, who knows, right? But actually, I talked to the editor of the book at the time, UFOs and Wartime, and I ran it by him at Berkeley Books. And he said, one of those things might be, if you do it, you might wind up regretting it. So we turned it down. But I dealt with a lot of those showrunners, and just sometimes they're relentless. And they actually do stuff that you can't do, you're uncomfortable doing, or, no one should do.
Right. Sometimes I think when it comes to Hollywood or television, they don't really deal in reality, and they think, well, because we're TV, we can do things that mm-hmm. other people can't do. If we want to drive a bus right up to the gate at Area 51, we can do that. We just have to show them that we're with a production company, and of course, they'll bend to our will. They're not gonna question us.
No, and a lot of I think their attitude too is just that for a lot of these people in these production companies, they might be doing a UFO, pitch this week, but it might be home remodeling pitch the following week. They're not experts on either one. They're just trying to get a job going. So when they finally do have something like UFO hunters, or not that particular show that was good, but just similar stuff like that, it seems like the people putting it together just aren't educated enough to talk in an educated fashion about the subject.
Do you find that those broad strokes are a little maddening at times, when you want to get into some minutia, or you want to focus on a particular topic when it comes to the field of ufology?
Now, this is what bothers me, and we talk about this on our radio show a lot, mm-hmm. is that there's so much noise out there when it comes to, let's just say UFOs, not just the whole paranormal, but just say the UFOs. There's just so much noise out there. There's just out-and-out false stories. There are stories that are built up from people seeing something that looked otherworldly but, wasn't. Right. Then there's people who saw things that, might be secret weapons, natural phenomena, who knows. But, 10%, you always say that 10% cannot be explained, I just wish everyone would concentrate on that 10%. TV producers, scientists, journalists, researchers, just go after the ones that cannot be explained, get rid of all the noise, and, finally figure out the puzzle.
See, Mac, you're my kind of guy. I tend to be a lot more skeptical, and I know everybody's a skeptic these days, but I really do tend to be skeptical when I see things in the sky. I really tend to ask those questions as to, am I looking at man-made technology? Am I looking at something that could be a trick of light? Am I looking at something that, is it anything other than extraterrestrial? And I think I think people tend to, or am I looking at a drone? Am I looking at, am I looking at something that I'm not quick to be moved, I think, to think uh-huh. that it's something otherworldly. And it seems to me that people, I don't know, they're very quick to want to accept it as otherworldly, and I get a lot of email of people saying, well, Tim, I don't understand why you don't aren't quicker to accept this stuff as being from another world or alien. And I said, even the bigger ships, the football field size ships, or the the triangular ships, they say, well, you've got to know that's not man made. Well, not necessarily. I'm quick to point out to people that you don't know what other countries are developing as far as technology.
Or our own. I'll tell you a quick story which kind of wraps it up for me. We live on a barrier island off of Massachusetts, and so we have a beach that's 10 miles long right out our front door. Mm-hmm. And you just at night you see all kinds of things, you know, because there's not a whole lot of light pollution if you, you know, go down onto the beach and so on. Mm-hmm. And the sand dunes and everything. So anyway, we were out there one night and, you know, just kind of looking at the stars. And we see these two sets of lights coming right at us. They're coming over these marshes and blinking lights very rapidly. They're very low. They're going very fast. And they look just really weird. And I said to my wife, wow, I'm actually going to see a UFO now. I'm actually going to see one. I was convinced there were two UFOs coming right at us. And they went over our heads, and they were medevac helicopters.
Oh, really?
Going to the helicopter and going to the hospital in the next town, you know? Mm-hmm. And up until that moment, I would have bet you $1,000 here's a UFO. It looked just so odd. And I think a lot of people see those things. And as you say, these days with drones, it's even more. It's even more.
Yeah.
So I think that makes the task a little bit harder to get rid of, you know, the noise, as people say. So, but, you know, but that's where you're going to discover real cool stuff and not just that you've been listening to a false story or false narrative all this time.
Yeah. And I guess with that, I know people. It's almost like Christmas when people look up in the sky. You know, you're hoping you see Santa Claus. You're hoping that Santa on the way. And I get that. I get the eternal hope that you're going to see or you're wanting to see something there, and that you want that faith and belief to be there. And I get that. But in that, I also don't want to be tricked, I guess.
Right.
You know, I don't want to think I've seen something or had that experience only to find out that, you know, that I get crushed in the end.
Right. You know, but people want to believe. That's the strange thing about it is, you know, when you hear, well, if the government does know what UFOs are, which I don't think they know where they come from. I know that they have more information that they exist, but I don't think they know where they come from. But the idea is always that, well, they're not going to tell us because, you know, we can't take it. Civilization can't take it. And, you know, that's baloney. You know, that doesn't even make any sense. So many people around the world in our country, look at how many people go to like any science fiction movie about UFOs like E.T. and stuff like that. People just they want to believe that there's something out there. You know, and I think everyone can handle it, to tell you the truth, too, you know. But, you know, for some reason, we've seen evidence for years that the government tries to, you know, kind of misdirect people. They put out disinformation on UFOs, and that means that in some way they must be following what's going on if they're putting out disinformation on them. So, I don't know. It's kind of frustrating in a way.
Do you think the disinformation is not because they know entirely what's going on, but because maybe they're a little lost themselves, like they know half the story?
I think they know half the story, yeah. I think they're lost, a little lost themselves as well. That's a good way to put it. Just the way that they act and just the way they do things doesn't indicate that they know where UFOs are or what they are or where they come from. Yeah, they're always in a reactory, you know, mode. You know, well, we've decided they're not, you know, an effect on the security of this country, therefore we ignore them. But, you know, behind the scenes, as we just found out, you know, they've been watching them all along. So why do that if you weren't at least, you know, wanting to know more about them or questioning them or you didn't know enough about them? I don't know. They don't act as if they are kumbaya with the aliens, though, in my opinion.
Right. Do you, in your opinion, do you think we've ever taken a successful shot at one and downed one?
No. Because if the technology we're talking about, you know, what people see, flying saucers and different UFOs, you know, operating that, you know, against the laws of physics, I don't think that, you know, one of our airplanes shooting something at it is going to hit it. I think it's impossible.
Okay.
Unless it's the luckiest shot in the world. And I don't think they have any crash ships or any of that stuff, because you'd be getting a different vibe from the U.S. military if they knew what was going on. That's my opinion.
You don't think they co-opted technology from Roswell or any of those?
No. What? I mean, I'd love to know what the technology is, you know, because if you're going to, you know, co-opt some technology, it would be from a flying saucer. It'd be, you know, how does this thing fly, and what's the power, you know, the propulsion units, and so on and so forth. You know, yet if they had this kind of information in 1947, why did they spend billions of dollars to basically put a dump truck into space? That's the space shuttle. It's the most complicated machine ever built by man, the space shuttle. Why would they go through all that and have them blow up and not be, you know, all that safe if we had somewhere hidden somewhere a reverse engineered way to get, you know, to the stars and beyond by, you know, flipping a switch from a flying saucer? I just don't see it. I don't see it.
You don't buy that either the SR-71 Blackbird or stealth technology came from alien technology?
No, because that's in a way that, you know, is dissing the scientists and the very learned people who put those things together. You know, I mean, Kelly Johnson was the guy who ran Lockheed in the 50s. And he was, you know, he was a genius. You know, they would go to him with a problem and he would come back with a solution, not in years, not even in months. He'd come back in weeks. And that's how the U-2 was built. And that's how the SS-71 was built. You know, because that guy had the know-how and the drive to get the people to Skunk Works to build planes like that. And you don't need alien technology for that.
I like you, Mac.
Okay. Sorry, I'm married, but okay.
No, I know. It's like an instant love affair right here. See, it's this is the stuff I argue with people who say, no, we totally, the whole reason you're holding that smartphone in your hand right now, the whole reason why technology has exploded exponentially across even from the 50s to now is because we have co-opted alien technology. Oh. And I keep saying, give humans some credit.
Oh, yeah. Oh, because all the credit goes to them. You know, yeah. there's nothing on this earth that hasn't been, you know, designed, invented and built and distributed by human beings. Because what is it? I mean, we're having smartphones. Big deal. They break down all the time. If the aliens were involved, you think that they'd have a smartphone, you know, that the glass wouldn't crack, right?
Right. I mean,
you know, and you'd be able to push a button and be in another galaxy, not just call someone down the street.
Right. Right.
So, yeah, no, I don't see it. We'd be living in a different world if we had co-opted alien technology.
I agree. I totally agree with you. I think we'd be in a much different world. I don't think we'd be taking elevators or escalators. I think we'd have teleportation technology that would get us more than from just point A to point B. I think, you know, I don't think we'd be standing on metal prosthetics. I think we'd be able to stand on a floating disc that would get you places. I think people who had issues with missing limbs would be able to regenerate limbs and not be able to use metal and plastic prosthetics.
Right.
You know, there's things like that that go through my mind. And I think, you know, there's a reason why I don't think that we're dealing with co-opted alien technology. And that's kind of why I don't think people's imaginations flow that freely when they think, well, we have to have gotten something from these alien crashes, or when they talk about Roswell, or even Mo-41, which supposedly happened before Roswell. You know, in your book, you mentioned, and the book is Mac Maloney's Haunted Universe. That's available right now on Amazon.com. You can also find it at MacMaloney.com, and that's MALONEY.com. And Mac is spelled MACK, MacMaloney.com. Mac, you mentioned where the best place in the United States is to see a UFO. Now, it could be argued the most, I guess, stereotypical place to, I guess, find one would be out in the desert, out in the Southwest. Mm-hmm. But is there a surprising place for me to go see a UFO?
Well, you know, I did this story for Conspiratorium, a brief story on Elk River, Minnesota, for some reason.
Really?
Is a place where a lot of UFOs are seen, and a lot of kind of differently shaped UFOs are seen there for some reason. One looked like a goldfish, one, you know, looked like just a flying V, and so on. And we also have kind of like a haunted ghost train story from Elk River, Minnesota. You're in Minnesota, right?
I am literally 20 miles away from Elk River right now.
Oh, really? Yeah. Flies. Anything going on up there? I don't know. I've never been there.
You know, when I'm on my way, I do a Saturday show at KNSI in St. Cloud, and I drive through Elk River on my way to St. Cloud, which now you've got me fascinated. Yeah. And there are train tracks that I cross when I go, and I'm wondering if I cross over those train tracks. What's the ghost train story for Elk River?
There was a bunch of, I guess there's a fishing spot nearby these old railroad tracks that had been abandoned for years. And these four guys went out and they were going to go night fishing at this small lake, I guess it was. And, you know, they kind of camped out and they're there and, you know, they're ready to go fishing. And all of a sudden here comes this train coming down these tracks that, you know, hadn't been used in decades, let's say. And it went right by them. All four of them swore it happened. They left all the camping equipment, everything, just jumped in the car and vamoosed, you know. So, yeah, strange. Yeah, just one of the, you know, the book is comprised of little stories like that, probably two or three hundred of them. And, yeah, both of those come from Elk River, Minnesota.
Elk River, really? You know, it's funny, and just a side note, Dave and I actually, when we got out of college, this is how long Dave and I have known each other, 30 years now, believe it or not. When Dave and I got out of college, we went and worked up at a sports marketing company up in Elk River as a way to kind of make some cash. And it was in Elk River, so we would drive up to Elk River every day. And I don't think you could convince us there's much. It's a sleepy little burg. There's not much up there, to be honest with you. And,
wow.
And I mean, it's developed a little bit since then in 30 years, but not much. I mean, it really is a little, small, little, quaint little town.
Right.
But it's just fascinating to think that that's the place that you would spot a UFO. It'd be
and all different kinds of UFOs, not just the disc shaped or the cigar shaped, just some really strange ones. And, you know, just for a second, going back to when people would say to you, well, you know, when people see these enormous UFOs, they're usually in a triangle with the size of an aircraft carrier and so on and so forth. And they say, you know, they have to be from another world. There's a craft, and the military had at least 20 years ago, and they might have even retired it by this point, and you've probably heard of it. It's basically a blimp. Mm-hmm. It's a big black blimp that has electrodes on the top of it that lights on the bottom of it that perfectly mimic the stars above, if you can imagine. So this thing can fly over you and look invisible.
Huh.
And they're huge. And they were testing those out in Nevada literally 20 years ago. And, you know, it's one way to spy on people if it's a clear night, or they can even kind of put clouds in the mix kind of. And it's kind of like, oh, sometimes you see skywriters, but they're actually pulling an electric sign or something. It's along those lines, but it's to perfectly mimic the atmosphere, you know, what's going on atmospherics wise above the blimp. And it's portrayed on the bottom of it, so it makes it invisible.
Very interesting. Welcome back to the Best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm Tim Dennison for Dave Schrader on a Saturday. Our guest is Mac Maloney. That's right. We're not doing supernatural news today. We're not doing Perisher. Instead, we are out in the middle of the sea, in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle on our way to the Bahamas on the Jericho Cruise. And we're talking with our friend Mac Maloney. You can check him out at MacMaloney.com. He's got a brand new book out there. It's Mac Maloney's Haunted Universe. It's available at Amazon.com. You can also check out Mac Maloney on the radio at Mac Maloney's Military X-Files. Just Google it and you'll check out his radio show there. Mac, before the break, we were talking about interesting places where you could look up into the sky and see a UFO, and you just pointed out there's one in my backyard when I get back home in Elk River, Minnesota. Where are some other now? And I should point out to you, Mac, that why we're here out in the middle of the Bahamas, sailing through the Bermuda Triangle, we're going to be either smart enough or stupid enough to try and do an intention experiment to try and summon one. We're gonna attempt this here on Sunday night. I don't know if you could say we're doing this on a lark or if we're doing this because we have a death wish or because we're naturally curious. Have you ever tried to summon a UFO?
No. I don't. Another thing I believe, just in my opinion, I think there are certain people's people who will see UFOs, and there are certain people who will never see UFOs. And I feel like I'm someone who will never see a UFO because, as we were talking a little bit before, I'm always looking for UFOs. You know what I mean? And yeah. It just seems like UFOs come to people not expecting them. The most unlikely people I know who have seen UFOs, I can't tell you. And they're not people like me. They're not people looking for them. They're all of a sudden in their lives, and it's in many cases, it's the first time they ever really thought deeply about what UFOs might be after seeing one.
So if you get a group of people like we have on the Jericho cruise here, we're out here on Norwegian cruise lines, mm-hmm. and let's say we get 50 to 100 people together, and we're on a ship, and there you have a group of, let's say we have 100, and you have 60 people who are meant to see a UFO, uh-huh. and you have 40 people who are probably not meant to see a UFO. Do you think that one group is going to outweigh the other?
If I knew that, we'd really have something going. I don't know. I don't know what's in the minds of UFOs. It just seems like I can't put it into words. The people that I do the show with, this guy named Juan Juan and another guy named Commander Cobra. Commander Cobra, he works for the military. He's in the military for years. He did 4 tours in Iraq as a pilot, and he's really on the straight and narrow. And Juan is someone who was in the Navy, the anti-submarines and so on, and anti-submarine warfare. And you can't really get two more opposite people. And Juan is someone who he's seen several UFOs, and he knows what they are, and he's a good witness and so on. Where Commander Cobra is someone who's flied, he has like close to 11,000 hours in the air, never seen one. So, how does that work? I just think that some people are meant to see them and some people aren't, and I don't know the difference between the two.
I hate to keep bringing this back to myself. I kind of think like this is one of those things that I'll never see. I kind of had to go around a little bit with Barry Strom a couple mm-hmm. weekends ago. He kept insisting that everybody had to have an alien past life, and I don't know where you weigh in as far as past lives go. But I don't know. Do you believe that you've ever had a past life, much less a past life as an alien?
I don't think I've had a past life as an alien, no. Mm-hmm. A past life, I don't know, because I have to say that, throughout my life, I've had, just quick bursts of memory that can't possibly be part of my memory, if you know what I mean, my own life experience. It just seems that and I know that I'm not the only one that this has happened to, that you just kind of know certain things that there's no reason you would know these things. Mm-hmm. And so I always think, I wonder if that is, something to past lives. But if we do live more than one life, then the whole structure of things, we're not meant to know about it, at least not directly, because then everyone would know, what they were. In past lives. And then when people, I hate to say this, but, when people go to different oracles or people who are spiritual readers and stuff and they want to find more about their past life, I haven't noticed they're always like a princess or a king or a queen or something. Yeah. You're not just some schmuck making pottery 5,000 years ago.
Right.
So, I don't know. And being, past life as an alien, that's a bit of a stretch, frankly.
I would think so, yeah. I mean, a past life as an alien is probably as foreign to me as like my first trip to India. I don't think I would know how to fit into the culture or even know where to begin, the first time I touched the soil of India. I don't know that I'd know what to do. And to me, it just feels very foreign. It doesn't feel like anything I'd be able to relate to.
Right. Stop eating hamburgers first when you get
well,
there.
Yeah, well,
a,
yeah.
It's
I mean,
a good start.
Yeah. I pet the cow, don't eat it, I think is you where you would go there. I don't. And in that, where I don't relate to the past life as far as mm-hmm. aliens go, I don't think that, I don't ever foresee in my lifetime, an alien ship just cruising up to my backyard and them stepping out and going, hey, we're here, where's the beer?
Right. You know? See, that's the but people have almost that experience, you know, and you know, some of the abduction stories, like I'm as much a skeptic as you are, mm-hmm. And you know, and I've always been kind of, you know, let's say a little bit skeptical about abductions, because when you hear them, you know, all lined up in a row, there's like two or three main stories, and every individual story just has a little bit of, you know, twists and turns, but people are telling you like three or four of the same kind of basic stories. But I used to do a show back in when I was on another network, where there'd be four or five of us together. We'd look into one topic for 90 minutes, and we looked into abductions, and we were talking about how the people who would hypnotize people who thought that they had been abducted. And there was a gentleman named John Mack, who was a psychiatrist at Harvard University, used to do this. Another guy named Bud Hopkins, who I'm sure everyone knows the name.
Oh, yes. Yep.
Okay, so now I heard later on that that when they would hypnotize people and people would be telling them about their abduction stories, that these two guys would not, let's say, publicize everything in their books that the person told them. They wanted to keep some information back to see if they start picking up that information from other abductees, and they haven't tainted, you know, the media pool with it, let's say, right? They, mm-hmm. So in one of the things that they held back was that a lot of abductees said that the people abducting them, the Greys, had tattoos. Okay, now that's such a strange thing, you know, that these aliens have tattoos. You're not going to make that up. That's not going to come to you because you've been watching a Twilight Zone or something.
Right.
If someone up in Oregon who's abducted and said the Greys had tattoos, and someone down in the Key West, Florida had the same, you know, experience, and there's no way that they could have known each other, that is really good evidence that, you know, there are Greys there and they get tattoos, you know. So the whole abduction thing, man, the deeper you get into it, it is just, you know, creepy isn't the word. It's just like really baffling. What is going on here? And why would they do this? If some race is enough to come here in these spectacular machines and do all these things that we see them doing, what do they need to probe us for? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I mean, they would know everything. They would know everything from, you know, a single teardrop or something, you know?
I think the most bizarre theory I heard behind probing was having to do with actual healing. The message coming from the aliens had to do with, well, it's all medical experimentation, but in the end what the probing has to do with was finding individual illness within you, and you'll find out that after these individual probing sessions that they're actually finding disease within you, and disease that you didn't even know you had, and they're healing that disease within you.
Wow. Okay. Well, wouldn't we be all fortunate if, you know, that happened, you know? All we have to do is go through an alien probe and we'll live forever. Will that be covered by Obamacare, do you think, maybe?
Maybe.
It is a medical procedure.
It is, but then it's a pre-existing condition.
Oh, that's true.
Comes back, then, you know, then, of course, some insurance companies won't cover that. But I digress. Now, I want to know, what's the most bizarre thing you've heard from abduction stories? Because obviously you've heard quite a bit.
Just that fact, just this general idea that, you know, that some of this evidence that especially these two researchers withheld, you know, started showing up on its own, you know, And that, and again, that just shows you that, you know, something is going on here. Is it some kind of, you know, elaborate government cover up, you know, to snatch people, to fool them into thinking that they're aliens, to bring them aboard ships that, you know, by all reports are, you know, fantastic, and to get a bunch of short statured military guys to get into gray uniforms and probe you? I mean, why would they do that? You know, that's happening at every hospital, you know, in the country today. Why would they go through these? Why would they go through all these machinations to mutilate a cow? You know, what's what's behind that? You know, if the aliens and once again these fantastic ships, what do they have to rip a cow apart for and then leave the evidence for people to find? You know, why don't they just snatch them? So, you know, a lot of these things are, you know, and they're going back to the abduction story, it's, you know, a lot of people, same thing happens to them. They always say, I never thought it would happen to me. I can't believe it happened to me. I've changed because of this and so on. So something must be happening. They can't all be making it up. But what is it?
True. Very true. Do you believe, Mac, that there, and I always, this was the part of the whole deal that I found hard to believe with that probing and these abductions. You know, the story goes that not only are they supposedly digging around looking at DNA and looking at how to heal certain things, but also that there's the reproductive part of everything. You know, they're taking an egg from a woman, they're taking sperm from a man, and they're making, you know, hybridization or they're making human-alien hybrids. Do you believe that there are a bunch of human-alien hybrids running around out there? And do you believe in the whole Rh-negative blood? I'll call it a fallacy because I know I'm going to get emails about it. Yeah. Do you believe in that whole instance?
No. And no, that's you know, I don't want to use the word nonsense, but you know, it's nonsense. You know, there are not alien hybrid. I mean, are the aliens here to put a human man and a human woman together by, you know, probing them and taking stuff out of them and mixing their DNA? There's a better way to get another human being, and that's, you know, drinks and dinner in a hotel room, right? You don't have to go through all this.
Very true.
Why would they do it? You know, why would they do it? They'd be, you know, light years ahead of us in all kinds of means, technology, and including medical technology, and they don't have to probe people to find out, you know, what your DNA is or what's wrong with you or anything like that. You know, it just doesn't make sense. But on the other hand, something is happening, you know, and you know, people for some reason are getting probed. But, you know, why would such an advanced culture, if these aliens are supposed to be so advanced, why would they do something that is just so messy and icky, you know? So I just don't buy any of that. And you know, why do we need a – do you know anyone who you suspect of being a hybrid human alien?
No.
No. Okay. No. I don't either. I you know, not really. I mean, you never know completely. But what would be the point? And where are all these people coming from? And what's the idea? They're going to repopulate the world with hybrid alien humans? Why? Why go through all that?
Yeah. The whole idea of maybe that these – human alien hybrids are of a higher consciousness, or that they're maybe a higher station of.
Well, where are they? We need them. We need a lot of higher consciousness people right now. This is the time.
We do, yeah. But it just, to me, it seems, I don't know. It just seems far-fetched. It really does. And to me, it doesn't seem like it makes much sense, if anything. So I guess I took the long way around in asking where the best place really is, other than Elk River, Minnesota, to find a UFO, or obviously the desert of the Southwest.
Right. Well, the thing about the desert of the Southwest, it's a great place to see them. And in fact, people go, you know, to the edge of Area 51 and they see strange stuff all the time. But, you know, we have to assume that. You know, the vast majority of that, you know, are basically secret weapons that are being, you know, tested. And if you catch a glimpse of them, you know, they're not going to look earthly to you. Anyone who knows what a B-2 stealth bomber looks like, I mean, if someone saw that 20 years ago or 30 years ago, they'd think that was some outer space, too, you know.
True.
And in the world, strangely enough, you know, one of the best places in the world to see UFO is in Scotland. Huh. In fact, it's in a place called the Falkirk Triangle, which is in the Midlands of Scotland. Now, this is where things get really strange. More people see UFOs in this part of the world than any other part of the world, you know, per capita, let's say. They're seeing them all the time. On an average of once a day, a UFO is reported to the British Defense Ministry in this little part of Scotland. Now, in this little part of Scotland is a place called Roslyn, and that has like a lot of it's a long haunted history going back hundreds, almost thousands, a couple thousand years. And This is where the Risen Chapel is, and that's the place where the Knights Templar supposedly left all their secrets. Mm-hmm. It's in the movie The Da Vinci Code, but this place really exists, and it's a very strange little place, and there's all kinds of like scientific data that's been carved into the stone inside on the pillars, and like the medical application for DNA, like the formula for DNA is supposedly on the walls, and there's carvings of corn on corn stalks, but no one had been to America yet this happened in 1200. It was built. Columbus didn't make it to America until 1492, and that's when corn was discovered. So how do these people up in Scotland know what corn is? And the whole connection to the Knights Templar, okay, so on and so forth. So now you're in this area where the Knights Templar, had all these kind of fantastic, wealthy, strange things about them. You have a lot of UFOs being seen. But also, for some reason, more people win the lottery in the Roslyn area than any other place in the United Kingdom.
Really?
So what's going on there? I mean, you get UFOs, you get the Knights Templar, and you get these people hitting the lottery all the time. So how can you explain that? There is no explaining. But it's a great place to see a UFO. California is another place. Lots of people see UFOs out over the Pacific, especially. The Pacific Coast Highway, they say, at night sometimes you'll see four or five cars just pulled over the side because something's flying around out there. Out in the Pacific, off the coast of the Bahamas and in Bermuda, lots of people see USOs. They see UFOs going, into the ocean and coming out of the ocean. So there are definitely places in the world and in this country that UFOs show up more often than other places in the country and around the world.
Well, that's what we're kind of hoping for this weekend, is to catch one of those USOs. But we'll see. Now, one of the things that I guess was kind of controversial this past year was President Trump came out and said that we need to form a space force. And it got some snickering from some people, and other people said, hey, yeah, it's not a bad idea. Now, one of the things that's brought up in your book is there a conspiracy by aliens to prevent us from conquering space? Do you believe that there is some sort of conspiracy by us to try and conquer space? And if so, what is there out there for us to conquer? Does it seem like there's vast resources out there for us to conquer, or is it just kind of a pipe dream?
There's a lot of resources out there for us to conquer. There's no doubt about it. I mean, the drive into space these days, I mean, when we went to, when the Apollo astronauts went to the moon, the idea was, national pride and scientific reasons. Well, the idea now is to, start using the resources of space to make money back here on Earth. For some reason, if you're able to capture one asteroid and it's made of the right stuff, you're going to be like a, billionaire, trillionaire, because they'll have so much nickel or some kind of, metal in it that's, hard for us to mine here. Here you got it all in one, big chunk, mm-hmm. To me, if you did something like that, then why wouldn't the nickel market crash? You know what I mean? Because suddenly you'd be overloaded with the stuff. But, supposedly there are planets and asteroids out there that are made primarily of diamonds, So if you bring one of these things back to Earth, then diamonds will be worthless, but they never think of that type of thing. I think I think space is going to be mined. I think that's what's going to drive it, is the financial aspect of it, of private industry. And I don't think it's a pipe dream at all. I think it's a way off. I think it's farther off than people think it is. But I think that's definitely down the road.
All right.
But with the Space Force, I have to tell you this story real quick.
Sure, yeah.
Well, we had this a guest on our show a couple of weeks ago, and he's literally an NCIS guy.
Okay.
And in fact, his office sends ideas to the producers of the TV show, and they do their ideas every once in a while. Mm-hmm. But this guy's had a interesting Korea. He's basically a bodyguard for like a couple admirals, right? Like the head of like Pacific Fleet operations. You can't get any higher. And he's his bodyguard and so on. So he's lived an interesting, he's had an interesting career. So we have him on the show every once in a while. And he's a real down to earth guy. And everything he tells you, you know, is true, because, you know, there's no sense that he would be making it up, because he's like doing these odd things. He's basically a military detective for he's a detective for the military, for the Navy.
Okay.
But he said, out of the blue, we asked him that Space Wars thing. He says, the first thing that struck me, you know, everyone, as you say, everyone snicked at it, but he says, well, supposing if they had some information, you know, that we need a space force, if you know what I mean, you know, would this be the way that they'd do it? And, you know, maybe this is the way that they would do it. I'm not a fan of any kind of, you know, politicians, really. You know, to me, they're all the same. Yep. But I think that the current resident of the White House, if there was like any kind of, you know, information on UFOs, disclosure and so on and so forth, it would have been out the day after, you know, he was elected, frankly. You're right. That just shows you there is nothing out there that is at least that our politicians know about. That isn't to say that the military, you know, gives everything to the politicians. They don't. They give them as little as possible, as it turns out, because the politicians, they're going to come and go, okay? Mm-hmm. The military and the people in the State Department, all the people who's, you know, this is their careers, they're the people, you know, who have to know more about what's going on, not just UFOs, but, you know, just the intelligence world, way more than the, you know, politicians have to.
You know, when I first heard it, I didn't think it was anything having to do with a defensive threat, to be honest with you. I look at the entire, and if you look at it objectively, if you look at the entire career of President Trump, he's a businessman, and he looks at economic opportunity. And to me, I just looked at it as, you know what? He's looked at this from an economic standpoint. Obviously, there's resources out there, and he's looking at, you know, what resources could there be out there that we're not taking advantage of? And so obviously he's thinking way outside the box, and he's thinking there's something out there that we're not taking advantage of that we could. And what's the one thing that obviously there's not any more of on Earth, and that's land. And he's a land developer. You know, I mean, you just put two and two together.
If that's the big plan, you know, if that's the big plan, I can actually move to Ireland and live tax-free. You know that? Because if you're a writer, if you're like a quote-unquote artist, you can move to Ireland, and if you're, you know, of Irish nationality, which I am, and live tax-free, you know? So, you know, if the big plan is that this is just one big, like, land development thing, I'm gonna head back to the homeland.
I don't blame you. I don't blame you. It's, I honestly, I mean, and the way that that kind of formulated in my mind was, believe it or not, when he met with Kim Jong-un over in North Korea, and the first thing he did was he pitched part of his landscape as some sort of development. He started pointing out how he could make a development out of it. And I thought, you know what? This guy still is a real estate developer. Even though he's president, he's thinking like a real estate developer. And I thought, the minute he came up with Space Force, I thought, he's looking at making developments in space.
Well, it was just strange that this guy who, like I say, he's just like a real straight shooter, this guest who was on our show, you know, and you know, he basically, you know, tells us stories, you know, the real life NCIS stories. Mm-hmm. For him to come out, you know, with this idea that, hey, maybe this is something, there's some kind of information out there that we're going to start, you know, building a space force here because there might be something coming our way. It was just an interesting person to bring that topic up.
It is very much so. Yeah, I just there may be something coming our way, but I don't know. I tend to think of our president as one that thinks economically first and of defense second. I really do think that he really does think of business opportunities first. I think he's very much that's the bottom line with him. But
well, I'm a moron when it comes to, you know, politics. Thank goodness.
I'm not saying I'm the be all end all, and I could be 100% wrong on the deal. But I do think that that's I think he probably took one look at, and much like, you know, if you look at the, you know, the minerals that make up a meteorite, he probably thought, well, you know, there's things to be mined there, and I'm sure there's plenty of things that could be mined on other planets, and you could send a force out there to do it, and you bring it back and make money on it. I don't know.
Well, you know, that is the, that's what makes the world go round, that's for sure.
That's true. That's very true. I tell you what, let's take a break right here. When we come back, there's a whole haunted universe out there, and Mac Maloney has discovered it with his book, and we're going to talk a little bit about some legends out there as well. You can check out the book right now at MacMaloney.com. That's the website. Also, the book is available on Amazon.com. It's Mac Maloney's Haunted Universe. Check out his show as well, his radio show, Mac Maloney's Military X-Files. You just Google it and you'll be able to find it there. And you have a band as well, Mac. It's called Sky Club, correct?
Yep, that's right. Yeah, it's a studio band, mostly with studio musicians. But we have a couple. We have one CD out. Another one is coming out. We just produced a record for our singer in Boston. We're in the Boston area. So, you know, it's a lot of fun. When we're able to get together, I'll get together and do it. It's, you know, we have a blast doing it.
Awesome. When we come back, we'll talk more about Mac Maloney's Haunted Universe. We'll do that next here on Beyond the Darkness.
Ladies and gentlemen, I have a grave announcement to make. Incredible as it may seem, both the observations of science and the evidence of our eyes lead to the inescapable assumption that those strange beings who landed in the Jersey farmlands tonight are the vanguard of an invading army from
beyond the darkness.
Welcome back to the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Beyond the Darkness. I'm Tim Dennison for Dave Schrader. We are aboard the Jericho Cruise, setting sail to the Bahamas via Miami. And while we're out here on the Jericho Cruise, we're trying to summon a USO. And we've got our friend Mac Maloney on the line. He has a brand new book out there, Mac Maloney's Haunted Universe. We spent the first half of the program talking about how to summon a UFO or how to see a UFO or what we do if we run into a UFO. Second part of the program, we'll be talking a little bit more about that haunted universe that's out there with Mac. And if you want to get a hold of the book, Mac Maloney's Haunted Universe, go to Amazon.com, look it up there, or you can go to his website, MacMaloney.com, spelled MacMaloney.com. And be sure to check him out there. You can check out where to go to his radio show from there. You can check out his band Sky Club from there. Everything that is Mac Maloney, you can check out there. The radio show, by the way, is Mac Maloney's Military X-Files. We want you to check out that show as well. Mac, in the book, Mac Maloney's Haunted Universe, you've got some very interesting topics, my friend. One of the ones, I'm just gonna skip right to it because I've never heard of this before. I know my nephew would probably giggle if I said this, and he listens on occasion, so I'm gonna come right out and say it, and I'm gonna try not to giggle. Poop monster.
Like the poop. I could see that coming. In North Carolina, I mean, you know, once again, the book is made up of all these different stories, and you know, they had some kind of a monster in a town there, in the sewage system. Mm-hmm. No one knew what it was. Lots of people saw it, and they had a, you know, like a news conference, and the head of the Department of Public Works there, I think his quote was, you know, what can I tell you? It looks like poop. So, you know, we call it the poop monster. You know, what happened to it? You know, who knows? But it was in the sewers around the Raleigh area, I believe, for quite a while.
And it did they say it smelled like poop? It just looked like poop?
We had space limitations in the book, so get into that.
You didn't flesh it out,
No, we gotta use your imagination.
I see. You gotta kind of fill in the blank, so to speak.
Right.
I see. Also in the book, I gotta ask about this too. I'm a huge fan of the culture of Japan, of the country of Japan, and the cursed subways of Japan is one thing I've never got a chance to visit Japan, but the cursed subways of Tokyo. Tell me a little bit about those.
Right. Well, they built there's this, you know, unbelievably enormous train station in Tokyo. Mm-hmm. And it has 27 levels to it, if you can imagine it. And it has so many different tracks, commuter trails coming into it, that it's just this kind of mind-boggling, you know, structure that they have done. And everything works great, you know, as per Japanese, you know, everything is on time and it's clean and, you know, it has shops and so on and so forth. Nothing really anything like it here in the United States where the subway system is people want to get on and get off.
Right.
And get out of there. Well, this is a place that they want people to stick around and, you know, eat and buy stuff. But anyway, it's supposedly so huge. And it's always under construction that there's a level underneath it that once you get down there, there's no way you can get back up for some reason. Hmm. You know, they just haven't built the exits yet or whatever. So, you know, these myths have gone around Tokyo, you know, which is kind of a superstitious place that, you know, don't go to the wrong place in the train station or you might not get out.
Really? That's scary but intriguing all the same. Have they ever had someone come back from that level only to say that they found bodies down there or they found...
Nope, just people disappear. They don't know where they go.
Really?
Last thing they saw was, you know, they can see them coming in on TV monitors coming into the station, but they don't see them leaving.
Wow. That's scary. Scary,
yeah, it
scary.
Is.
I know some of the best, some of the best horror right now is coming out of Japan, and they truly have some imagination over there. I find some of their culture absolutely fascinating, and of course, being a huge wrestling fan, I mean, some of the best wrestling right now is coming out of New Japan Pro Wrestling, so it's just some fascinating stuff. Now I know we had talked about UFOs in the previous segment, but the UFO trail in Chile. What is so special about that trail in Chile?
Well, you know, if you really want to, you know, see UFOs, it depends on, you know, how much of your time in your life you want to devote to this. You can go down to Chile and you land, I believe, in Santiago, or you land at a major city, but then you continuously have to make your way up to the Andes. So you're going from, you know, smaller town to smaller town to smaller town. And finally, I think you take a like a mule train and you go up to the UFO trail. And what that is, you're up in the Andes. And once again, it's one of these places, you know, for years, hundreds of years, when the native peoples were there, you know, their history is full with seeing UFOs there, and people still see UFOs in this area, but you really have to go through a lot to make it on this trek. And at the end of the trek, there's this strange kind of plain way, way up in the mountains where all the rocks have been, you know, machined off. There's no other way to put it. You know, it's just boulder after boulder, but there's, you know, some kind of, shaping, some kind of engineering process put this place together. So if you don't see a UFO, what they say, that the tourist agencies who put on these tours, they say, well, you know, once you get to this very strange place, it's worth the trip. And it probably is. But that's for the people who are really committed to seeing a UFO.
Hmm. Wow. I can't believe this, but we talk about, well, let's talk a little bit about the U.S. military for a little bit. There's a hidden base in the Caribbean, correct?
Yes, right. It's in one of the Bahaman Islands. It's right in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle, and it's called AUTEC, and it's basically the U.S. Navy's Area 51. If you look at a map between the east coast of Florida and the west coast of the Bahamas, there's actually a trench there, and it's been, you know, carved out of there for millions of years for the Gulf Stream going up into the Atlantic. So it's very, very deep there. And they one of the things that we know they do is they bring new submarines there, and they test all kinds of new equipment, you know, at this very, very deep part of the trench. At least, you know, we know that they do things there. In fact, for the book, I talked to someone who had been there, and he confirmed that's what they do. But there's also stories about there are hidden tunnels there that our submarines can actually get to this base without being seen, which is interesting. But the most interesting thing about AUTEC is that, as we were talking about earlier, there's lots of USO sightings there. People see UFOs coming out of the sea there all the time. Now, the strange thing is that also at AUTEC, they have this radar and sonar system. They have a sonar system that is so sensitive. Think about this. They have a sonar system so sensitive. That's what you are searching for submarines under the water with. It can pick up the noise of a Russian beer bomber going over the top of Norway. All right, they're in the Bahamas.
Wow.
That's how sensitive their sonar equipment is. And this thing is flying. They're listening. You know, they can pick up its vibrations under the water. And their radar system down there is just as, you know, fantastic technologically wise. But if you talk to them, the Navy, they say, we never get any reports of UFOs. That's not true. You know, people see them down there all the time. So either all this equipment they have down there that has this fantastic capability doesn't work, or they're lying to us, because they'd be picking up UFOs and USOs on all this, you know, unbelievably high technology equipment. So what's it going to be? You know, it's just another case of the military basically, you know, lying to us, saying, you know, we don't get any UFO reports. We don't see any UFOs. It's impossible for them not to see them down there.
And we're sailing right past it.
There you go. Yeah, a lot of stuff happens down there.
This would be an interesting trip. I'll give it that. Now, the U.S. Navy actually assembled a puke gun.
Yeah, they had a puke gun. Yep. You know, they have a number of weapons. Or they tried these, and it's mostly for crowd control and okay. stuff like that. And, you know, they made a gun that could actually send some kind of radio waves, you know, who knows, through walls. And what they wanted to do is, if you had a hostage situation and if you're in the other wall, if you're just in the next room over, they would, you know, bring in the puke gun and, you know, these rays would go right through the wall. And, you know, everybody in the next room, you know, hostages and hostage takers alive. Like, with, you know, they'd get so sick, they'd start, you know, vomiting. What more? How else can you put it? Uh-oh. And then, you know, when in theory, the bad guys are, you know, at a point, they're not going to put up much of a fight. And, you know, the rescuers go in and take care of things, you know. But, yeah, they had a puke bomb. And they have a weapon, too, where they send microwaves at you to the point where it feels like your chest is, like, burning. And you just have to get out of the way of this beam. And, yeah, that's also it's more for crowd control more than anything else.
Wow. Oh, I know we've heard, I mean, we've talked to people on the show before who have been victim of it's like a sound weapon or even microwaves. People have been bombarded by the government before, and it seems like a pretty fantastic story, that, you know, every time they turn around, they were hearing things, or they were seeing things, or they were feeling like they were being bombarded by that feeling like you're talking about in their chest. That they were being followed, they were being watched, and being driven nuts. But a puke gun, ugh.
Yeah, puke gun. You know, in the 50s, the British started developing a secret weapon that would have the ability. Now, this is back when they thought that World War III was going to be this gigantic land war in Europe. You know, literally millions of soldiers fighting each other. Nuclear bombs going off, just horrible, right?
Mm-hmm.
Their weapon was going to have the ability to blind up to 50,000 enemy soldiers at once. Now think about that for a second. You know, in war they say, you know, the people, you know, killing a soldier, okay, he's dead. But if you wound a soldier, it takes two guys to take care of that guy. You know, so yeah, your force structure goes down the hill. Can you imagine 50,000? Blind soldiers on a battlefield just wandering around, crazy.
Oh,
I mean, think of the chaos that would bring.
Yeah.
And finally, the British didn't do it. They decided it would be just a weapon, you know, just too horrible for humanity, even worse than a nuclear bomb or something, you know. So, you know, they come up with these ideas. I mean, puke gun, you know, heat ray, you know, blind bombs. You know, they don't all go into production, but, you know, these guys are always thinking these things up for some reason.
It's amazing. When the U.S. was in Vietnam, they ran into something called a rock ape. Explain to me what a rock ape is.
Right. I had never heard of these. Had you ever heard of them before?
No. Uh-uh.
Me neither. And I thought, you know, I've done a lot of reading about Vietnam. I know people who went there.
Uh-huh.
There are these creatures in in Vietnam. And once again, it's one of these things, you know, there's historical reports about them going back hundreds of years, even thousands of years. And I guess the best thing you could compare it to is like an orangutan. You know, they're as big as humans are. They have a lot of human characteristics. And the U.S. forces in Vietnam used to run into them all the time. And they were told, you know, don't put this in your report. Don't write home about these things. But, you know, they were very territorial. So, you know, we have stories in there about just American, you know, patrols kind of going down the jungle path or whatever, running into these things. And they would surround the soldiers, which is kind of weird, and throw rocks at them. Huh? That's how they get their name, the rock apes. Hmm. And they would make this really weird screeching sound, which would just go right through you, you know. And there's instances where, you know, these Marines are out in an ambush, and these things are, you know, on all sides of them throwing rocks, big boulders in at them, and the, you know, the Marine command just, you know, back in Saigon, wherever, just say, you know, just sit tight, just take it, you know, don't shoot them, just wait till they go away. And eventually, they did go away after an hour, if you can believe that. So. You know, who knew that there are rock apes in Vietnam?
That's amazing that they'd hunker down for an hour. I mean, you would think that especially with a platoon or a battalion that had guns that were surrounding I don't know how many would surround a battalion at a time.
Well, you know, I mean, usually, this is a company, so there's 100 people in there. So, you know, there had to be at least 100 of these apes. But there's a perfect example of, you know, how war is just like so stupid. You know, as you say, there they are sitting there with all these weapons, but they say, don't kill the monkeys. But if, you know, the Vietnamese came down the trail, then we can kill, you know? I mean, that's how screwy war is.
Wow. You would think that's weird that they would say don't kill the monkeys, don't kill the animals. Yeah, but yet the government seems aware of them but tells you not to touch them.
Yeah, not to touch. And you know, they weren't running into them every day, but there are documented instances where, you know, our troops ran into these rock apes, and I'm sure the communist troops ran into them too.
Bizarre indeed. Of the ghostly type, you know, it's funny that now about 8 hours away from here, you've got Kansas, you've got Missouri, and in that area in Mississippi, Mississippi's a little further away than Kansas, Missouri, but in Kansas and Missouri, I hear a lot of different stories, and they tend to be of the devilish type, or they tend to be more satanic. And we always hear about the doorway to hell in Stull, Kansas. Tell us a little bit about Stull, Kansas, and the legend and lore of Stull.
Right. It's, you know, first of all, we found out that it used to be called Skull, Kansas, supposedly, you know.
Really?
And that the local fathers changed the name. But, supposedly there's a graveyard there that place and a place over in India somewhere is the only two places in the world that people consider is a doorway into hell. So a lot of people show up there on Halloween, but other people who have gone there, you know, and written about, they say, you go into this graveyard and it really does give you the creeps right up, you know, right from the beginning. Mm-hmm. And people feel like, you know, that there are people like behind them and touching them on the back and, you know, coming up and back them. That just that feeling that someone is watching you or close by, you don't know what's going on. That happens a lot there. You know, and then some people have, you know, said that they've seen the devil come out of that place and so on. But yeah, that's what makes Stull, Kansas famous.
I had an ex-girlfriend who took a nail from that graveyard,
and she really? Yeah,
she was convinced that it was good luck.
How'd that work out?
It didn't. It was horrible. No, okay. She had terrible luck, and she was carrying this thing around with her, and she managed to give it to me.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, she said, this is my lucky nail and blah, blah, blah. And I had this thing and I was having incredibly bad luck. And so
yeah.
I was talking to John Zaffis about it. This was probably, gosh, what was this? This was probably, I want to say it was 10 years ago now, 10, 11 years ago now. And I said, man, John, I've just been having the worst luck. And I mean, nothing was going right. And I go, the only thing I can point out is that I have this nail that my ex gave me, And I said, I think it's from Stull, Kansas. I think it's from a graveyard. And he goes, oh, Timmy, you got to get rid of that thing. You got to, you know, you got to throw it in, you know, like a source of running water, like a river or something like that, and bind it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I said, oh, yeah, you bet I'm going to. So I drove out to the Mississippi River and I did what I could to bind it, threw it in the river. And, and sure enough, I did, and it was like she had a psychic sense. The minute I threw that thing in the river, she contacted me to get it back.
Oh, and really? Yeah? Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay.
And I said, oh, no, that thing's gone.
Yeah.
I threw that sucker in the Mississippi. And she said, you what? She said, that was my lucky nail. And I go, it ain't that lucky, and it's gone, sister.
Yeah. Well, hey, listen, you know, I threw it away. If it was lucky, I wouldn't have thrown it away.
That's right. In fact, I did it. I threw it away on the St. Paul side I was on my way back from softball. I was playing softball with Minnesota Public Radio at the time, and I threw that sucker in the Mississippi on my way home. I was having such a bit that most sports fans will appreciate this. I went 0-for-4 one night. Playing softball.
Oh, wow, huh?
And I'd screwed up my knee, and I thought, this is it. I don't know why that was. I don't know why that was the final straw. I'd screwed up my knee, and because it was softball, and I went 0-for-4, and everything was just going wrong in my life. And I went, nope, this nail is. And the nail for some reason had just popped up like in my center console, and I was looking at it. Like,
really? Okay. Yeah.
Like, I didn't know. The thing was not, it was like not, like, you know how something is like totally not in your mind at all, and all of a sudden it shows up right in front of you?
Sure.
Like, this thing had not been in my center console. It hadn't, I totally hadn't been thinking about it. And all of a sudden, like a bad horror movie, it just popped up. And it was sitting in my center console looking at me.
Wow. How many years did you have the nail?
I didn't have it very long. I probably had maybe 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked,
well, you know, now you know why. Did you buy any lottery tickets during those 2 years?
Yeah, but I don't think I won anything.
Wow, what a surprise! Yeah. See, you just say you got rid of the nail, go buy a lottery ticket.
But this thing popped up. It was looking at me in my center console in my truck, and I said, "You are going to go take a bath."
Yeah, there you go. All right, and good then, for you.
Yeah. So, but that thing came from that cemetery in Stull, Kansas, and I just said, "I'm getting rid of you." Yeah. So that's my one Stull, Kansas.
All right.
My one Stull, Kansas story. In Mississippi, they have the Devil Worshippers Road. Tell me a little bit about that.
Right. There's a road there that actually, if you see pictures of it, it looks like it's a road going through a forest. It was a road that was in use years and years ago, and then it just kind of fell into disuse. And a lot of people think that, you know, that devil worshippers, you know, at some point in its history used this road and kind of cursed it. But if you go down this road, you need like kind of an all-terrain vehicle to go down it. But people who try it, they say that, you know, all of a sudden it seems like people are trying to turn the car over, crawling all over the car, and, you know, strange mist, you know, comes around the car. It's like a really kind of a creepy situation there. So a lot of people, you know, don't even go near this place. But, you know, these people who do, they do it for laughs, you know, and I think they usually come out of there not laughing.
Not good at all. Not good at all. And one of our favorite subjects here on the show is, of course, black-eyed kids. And in Missouri, there's a black-eyed kid experience that makes your book.
Right, yeah. You know, black-eyed kids, of all the things we deal with, especially on the radio show, I don't know, these things, you know, the black-eyed kids kind of creep me out. I mean, basically what it is that people answer their door. It's usually in the daytime, and there'll be, you know, either one or two kids wait. And, you know, they're maybe not quite teenagers, probably, you know, let's say 8 or 9 or whatever. They always look disheveled. They are always in clothes that look like they came from the 50s, and they're ripped and dirty and so on. These kids look like they're in trouble, and they ask to come in your house, you know, can you help us, that type of thing. But the whites of their eyes are actually black. This is how the story goes. Now, the strange thing about it, and there were people who have seen these kids and, won't go out, you know. I mean, they won't leave their houses for weeks at a time because it's terrified them to you know, encounter these kids. The strange thing is that, yeah, they happen here in Missouri, but they have also happened at military bases in North Carolina and Georgia, and also over in U.S. military bases over in Europe as well. So, you know, why? Once again, it's one of those things, you know, what's the connection here? But, yeah, people have seen them in it, and they just generally creep them up because they're kids. You know, it's weird for a kid to be creepy, you know?
Yeah.
And when they are, they're extra creepy.
You know, you have an interesting phenomenon in your book, too, that happened in Alabama called the McCullough Hum. Explain to people what that is, and then I have a question about it when you're done explaining it.
It's, you know, there are a number of places around the world that, you know, hear some kind of hum. Taos, New Mexico is another place. Bristol, England is a place. There's places up in Oregon, same thing. And in this case was people would hear this hum, and it's always the same thing. People can't put their finger on what it sounds like. You know, some people say it sounds like machinery. Sometimes people say it sounds like the wind going through trees. Some people say it sounds like a TV turned up loud or whatever. But, you know, if you walk towards it, it seems to get further away from you. If you go in the direction where you think it's coming from, it seems to fade away. You know, very strange. And there are people like in Bristol, England, who hear this hum all the time. Once again, we're talking about some people things happen to, and some people they'll never happen to. There might be something in these people that there's a resonance in them that, you know, vibrates to this hum or something, you know, who knows. But some people move. I mean, they'll just get out of the area to get away from the hum. So, yeah, the hum, whatever it might be.
Yeah. Now, do you have a theory behind that hum? Because I'm interested in that noise, and we've reported on it on Supernatural News in different locations when it's happened.
Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, when people say that it sounds like machinery, mm-hmm. you know, the only weird thing that has ever happened to me is slightly related is I used to live up in upstate New York, and I lived near the Northway, which is the major highway that goes from New York City up to Montreal.
Okay.
And I mean, I lived maybe a mile away. I would lay in bed, you know, on a summer's night with all the windows open, and I would hear what it would sound like to me, a tractor-trailer truck out on the highway trying to shift its gears.
Okay.
It sounds like it wants to go into another gear.
Yeah.
And I can remember, like, laying there and, you know, hearing it, and then, you know, other things are going on, hearing it, and then still hearing it 10 minutes later, and you'd think, that truck should be out of earshot by now. Why am I still hearing this?
Yeah.
And the strange thing is that when I moved back here to where we are now, north of Boston, on occasion I hear the same thing, you know? So it's like, what can that noise be? It can't be a truck. The truck would be way, way down the road now. It's the same thing with this hum. It's like, what, you know, what can it be? Is it machinery under the earth? Is it, I don't know. I mean, where else could it be? It must be machinery under the earth. Maybe it has something to do with these underground tunnels that, you know, some people are convinced the military are just building all over the country, which could be true because that's how you get away from, you know, nuclear bombs. It's the only good way is, you know, just tunnel underground. But
right, yeah.
I get no idea what it is. But, boy, people hear it a lot.
You know, you bring up that theory about the underground tunnels, and a lot of people did believe that at one point the government was trying to create these tunnels underground, having to do with some sort of preparedness for nuclear war. Other people were citing like Gabriel's trumpet or something having to do with Armageddon at one point, which I thought was a little far-fetched. But I don't know. But people were hearing it in different cities and sometimes simultaneously, which was kind of alarming. I don't know.
Right. It's strange that people would hear the same thing, you know, half a world away. There's a video on YouTube that I've seen a few times. And basically what it is it's these people up in Canada. They're electrical workers. So they're walking along in the snow in a forest, and they get the helmets on and so on. And they're out there clearing lines. And they hear this noise. These people are out in the middle of nowhere. And they hear this noise. You can just see them looking around saying, what the heck is that? And it's very loud. And it sounds like Gabriel's horns. I mean, there's no other thing that it can that you think it would sound like a trumpets. You know, once again, what's going on here? Who's causing that?
Yeah, it's very, very strange. Very strange indeed. And it's one of those phenomena that, you know, when you see a story or you see different stories about it, the media automatically will bring in an electrical worker, or they'll bring in a civil engineer to try to explain it. And of course, you know, the one time, I'm trying to remember what city out east, they brought in a team of civil engineers that had them up all night. And I'm trying to remember if it was Philadelphia or who it was. Maybe it was even Boston. I'm trying to remember. And they had a team that stayed up all night trying to triangulate it. And it was, all these poor souls did was stay up all night and try to triangulate this noise. And they were trying to drive around, trying to figure out where the center, the epicenter of it was.
And they never find it.
Right. And they just lost sleep. They just lost sleep. That's all they did. And it was almost comical to watch them try and drive around and figure out where exactly the epicenter was. But I just felt sorry for them. But if there was a secret behind it, nobody was talking. You know, I mean, it was just
right.
You know,
see, that's how I feel about a lot of things these days. Is that, you know, these days people just talk. You know, they blab. I mean, even the people who whacked Bin Laden, you know, SEAL Team 6, those guys are supposed to be, you know, sworn to secrecy until they die.
Right.
And you know, a couple of them written books and stuff like that. You can't keep anything a secret these days.
Yeah.
Eventually.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. You know, so why doesn't someone come out and say, hey, you know that hum you hear? Yeah, I used to work for the factory on the ground who used to do it. You know, someone, 60 Minutes would give him $1 million if he could prove that he was right, you know?
Right.
No one ever does it. No one ever does it. So it makes you think, well, you know, maybe it isn't man-made. Maybe it isn't some, you know, machinery operating underground or some digging, you know, machine, you know? So I don't know. There's a lot of witnesses out there. And these days, you know, people, they don't stay quiet for long.
They don't. And, that's why I have a hard time believing that there are still conspiracies that exist. You know, a lot of well-known conspiracies, especially to me, I find it hard to believe that the Kennedy assassination, that there's still a mystery behind it.
Uh-huh.
Because you'd have figured that somebody would have opened their mouth by now and we'd know. You know,
well, yeah, I agree with you. You know, but on the same part, you know, along the same lines, you know, there are military programs and projects and things that the military has done in this country that we'll never know about. You
sure.
know, we'll never know about. There's things that are still classified from World War One, you know, that we will never know about. So if the Kennedy assassination was the work of someone beyond just, you know, crazy Lee Harvey Oswald, you know, there's a possibility that we would never hear about something like that because it would be contained. Five people at the most would know.
True.
You know?
True.
If you worked at some underground factory that, you know, is making so much noise that people hear a hum, you know, there'd be more than five people involved. And that would give you more potential witnesses, more people to spill the beans or whatever. Personally, I think the JFK, what happened there is, I think there were two assassins there that day, and they neither knew the other was there. That kind of fills a lot of gaps, you know. Mm-hmm. Where did the guy go up in the grassy knoll? Why did, you know, Lee Harvey Oswald, you know, basically turn out to be the chump and things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think happened. I think it was a perfect place for an ambush, and these people were assassins, I thought they were, and they picked the perfect place to shoot at them. And it just happened to be the same place for two of them.
Yeah, yeah. Two more before we leave people today. In Maine, there was a real-life vampire that was arrested. Tell us a little bit about that vampire.
Oh, wow. This is one of the craziest stories in the book. And I'm not going to pronounce his name. I'm not going to try. But basically, it was a guy who he thought he was a vampire. I guess he thought he was a vampire. You know, who knows what exactly he did recreationally as far as, you know, intoxicants, let's say.
Okay.
But, you know, he beat up and he killed, I think, one biker, got into scrapes with others. He had a girlfriend, and they actually drank the blood of their victims or something along those lines. And
jeez.
It's like, wowee, you know? I mean, is this someone who's just taking it to the next level, or is this something that's inside them? Wow. You know, Maine's not that far from here either.
Yeah, you're kind of close, a little too close for comfort there, Matt. That's for sure. So. And then in Maryland, which also isn't too far away from you either, there is the Beltsville Goatman. Tell us a little bit about him.
You know, it's funny because this is another example how, you know, like a DPW, they call them around here, Department of Public Works. They're the people who will patch your, you know, the street with asphalt and stuff like that, clear out the sewers and that kind of stuff, keep the town running, let's say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, these guys just saw this goat man. I mean, there's no other way to describe what this person looked like. This creature looked like half man, half goat, running around, attacking them, supposedly throwing animals off of overpasses and stuff like that. And then came the story that there was some kind of an institute nearby years before, and that some kind of, you know, man to goat experiment went terribly wrong or something like that, you know. But you know, once again, lots of people saw this particular, you know, creature. They all can't be making it up. They all can't be hallucinating. You know, they all must have seen something, but the question is what, you know, and where do these things come from? Where they disappear to, you know? Because they're not around. They don't stay around. They just, you know, people see them for a brief time, and then you never hear of them again. Oh, they come back infrequently. So, you know, what is happening? You know, what could possibly be happening?
Hmm. Well, it's a great read for Halloween, folks. It's Mac Maloney's Haunted Universe. It's available right now on Amazon.com. You can also follow everything Mac Maloney at MacMaloney.com. That's MacMaloney, MacMaloney.com. Also, check out Mac's radio show, Mac Maloney's Military X-Files. You can Google it or just check out MacMaloney.com for all of his links there. Mac, I want to thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you, Tim. I really appreciate it. I had a great time. Thank you.
And I did as well. And wish us luck, my friend, because we're going USO hunting out here in the Bahamas.
I'm glad you don't have that nail with you. That was good to get rid of that before you went on the cruise.
Oh, you're telling me. I don't. Otherwise, I'd probably get swallowed up by the ocean.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Maybe. Right. You never know.
That's right. Well, folks, tomorrow we're going to be joined by a former Minneapolis Police Department officer who has had a near-death experience, and not one that's all that great. Dave will join us tomorrow, and we're going to sit down and listen to his harrowing tale of a near-death experience that went terribly, terribly awry. That's coming up tomorrow on Beyond the Darkness. For Dave Schrader, I'm Tim Dennis. We'll see you tomorrow right here on the best in Paranormal Talk Radio. This has been Beyond the Darkness.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
At CVS, it matters that we're not just in your community, but that we're part of it. It matters that we're here for you when you need us, day or night. And we want everyone to feel welcomed and rewarded. It matters that CVS is here to fill your prescriptions and here to fill your craving for a tasty and, yeah, healthy snack. At CVS, we're proud to serve your community because we believe where you get your medicine matters. So visit us at CVS.com or just come by our store. We can't wait to meet you. Store hours vary by location.